Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our new studio on Mount Helix in La Mesa. Happy Earth Day, everyone, and it just happens to be my birthday. We have a lot of Earth Day news for you to start with, beginning with an update on the Climate Change Accord, the latest climate-breaking records locally and nationally. And then from Public News Service, a message from Interior Department Secretary Sally Jewell on the future of conservation and our national parks. We'll also have the latest results from the presidential primary in New York. We'll have some information for you today on a bill by San Diego Senator Ben Wesso to put a stop to gender pricing differences, in other words, charging more for the same products for women and girls than men and boys pay. And there's more good news, women. Harriet Tubman's face will soon be appearing on the $20 bill. And speaking of strong women, Emma Turner, a member of the La Mesa Spring Valley School District Board, has just been appointed to a prominent national position where she'll be able to be a leading voice for African-American students and all students in our public schools. From CAL FIRE, we've got the latest on fire season, and here's a hint, it's going to be starting early. Hear about the firefighting surge across California. And in Lemon Grove, there is a four-footed team of firefighting prevention experts munching their way across the area, and we'll have details. On Vines and Wines, we have a troubling story for you today about a threat to our local winemaking industry. No, it's not from an infestation or drought, though they've weathered those too. It's from our very own county staff and changes to an ordinance being proposed that'll be heard this week, which local winemakers say could cause our local winemaking industry to die on the vine, and we'll have the tales. We've also got some good news for local vintners, 25 of them, who won major awards in an international wine competition this week. Now, on our Crime Beat report, we have a warning about a freeway shooting in Spring Valley. And for Lakeside residents, heads up, there's been some changes proposed to that sand mining project in the El Monte Valley. Our newsmaker interview today is with Stephanie Ortega from Promises to Keep, a wonderful organization that's helping foster youth right here in San Diego County. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the fun festivals and events coming up across our region this week, from a Beethoven to Broadway concert to the Western Days Parade rolling out in downtown Lakeside. On Sounds of History today, we'll tell you about a local landmark that's just been dismantled and was known by locals as the Pterodactyl's Nest. And if you want to know what that is, you'll just have to stay tuned for today's show. We'll tell you about a measure to build more fire stations that's going to be on the ballot in San Diego, and why that's important for people across our region. Then on Ready, Set, Grow, hear how you can attract butterflies and hummingbirds to your gardens this spring. And finally, from CAL FIRE, we've got some information about how you can be ready for wildfire and help firefighters protect your home. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Leaders from 150 nations are gathering in New York today, Earth Day, to sign the historic Paris Agreement, a coordinated global effort to reduce climate pollution. Boulder Mayor Suzanne Jones says she hopes the event will send a strong message to global markets that governments are serious about moving away from fossil fuels. She notes Colorado has been a leader in harnessing policy to develop clean energy.
And we are rapidly trying to bring online more solar and wind energy. We think it's not only important for our own economic growth, because that's a growth industry here in Colorado, but it also is a model for the rest of the country about how we can transition off fossil fuels.
The EPA's Clean Power Plan, which aims to reduce climate pollution by 32% below 2005 levels by the year 2030, is the cornerstone of America's commitment. But the U.S. Supreme Court put it on hold, pending the outcome of a lawsuit by some industry groups and states. Opponents claim the plan would force power plants to make big investments to comply with rules that could be overturned depending on the outcome of the next election. David Ellenberger with the National Wildlife Federation was in Paris during the climate summit that produced the global agreement. He points to a recent survey that found 70% of U.S. power company executives think the Clean Power Plan targets should be left in place or increased. He says the plan is the single largest action the nation can take to curb climate change.
It's a large commitment on our part, but we're not the only one that's making a big commitment. China and India, a couple of the world's biggest polluters, are also putting forth very solid agreements to reduce their carbon emissions, and that's good news for wildlife and people across the world.
Ellenberger adds, reducing climate pollution would also have a big impact on public health. According to the EPA, the Clean Power Plan would prevent 3,600 premature deaths and 90,000 asthma attacks each year by 2030. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Galatis.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Citizens around the world will be commemorating the 36th anniversary of Earth Day on April 22nd, including the annual Earth Day Fair locally in Balboa Park. Around the world, signs of climate change are increasingly evident on a local and a national scale. Globally, temperatures have been broken in January, February, and March this year, each hotter than the same month the prior year. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reports that March was the 11th consecutive month to see a new record since agencies started tracking them in the 1800s. The National Weather Service reports that on Sunday, the temperature at Lindbergh Field in San Diego reached 84 degrees, breaking a 137-year-old record dating back to the pioneering era in 1879. Even hotter, mid-April temperatures were recorded in El Cajon, where the heat wave reached 90 degrees. Local residents can expect some relief from the unseasonable heat soon, with a cooling trend sweeping into the region just in time for Saturday's Earth Day celebrations.
The United States needs to make a major course correction on environmental issues, according to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, who spoke Tuesday to the National Geographic Society in Washington. The secretary decried the $12 billion maintenance backlog at national parks and called for passage of the National Parks Centennial Act to better fund the repairs. She also called on Congress to permanently reauthorize the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
We are at the dawn of a new conservation era in America. Americans are more determined than ever to solve the problems we face, to take action to confront climate change, to pass ballot initiatives to fund parks and open space, to work the lands in a sustainable way, to give everyone an equal chance to get outdoors.
Jewell said the Park Service is working hard to attract more people from low-income communities to experience nature and praised President Barack Obama's Every Kid in a Park program that provides a free pass to any national park once a year for all fourth graders and their families. She also announced the results of a study that is about to be released by the National Park Service on the park's economic impact over the past year.
Parks generated $32 billion in economic activity for the nation in 2015. They did that on a budget of about $3 billion, meaning that for every dollar invested in the national parks, taxpayers saw a 10-to-1 return on investment.
In honor of Earth Day on Friday, National Park Week, and the 100th anniversary this year of the National Park System, all national parks are free this weekend. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Front runners widened their leads in Tuesday's New York presidential primary, where three of the five contenders had strong New York ties. New York's former Senator Hillary Clinton won with 58% of the vote, picking up 139 delegates. But Senator Bernie Sanders, who was raised in Brooklyn, got 42% and picked up 106 of the delegates. On the Republican side, New York businessman Donald Trump scored a resounding victory with 60% of the vote, winning 89 delegates. In second place, Ohio Governor John Kasich got 25% and earned 3 delegates. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, with just 14.5% of the vote, was shut out of receiving any delegates. The next primary contests are on April 26th, when five states will be casting votes, all in the Northeast: Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
California women and girls are spending $41 billion more than men and boys for similar products that everyone needs. That's according to a Senate Judiciary Committee analysis of Senate Bill 899, the Equal Gender Pricing Bill authored by Senator Ben Wesso, a San Diego Democrat. Just in time for Equal Pay Day last week, Senate Bill 899 passed the Senate Judiciary Committee by a 5-1 vote. California law already prohibits gender price disparity in services such as haircuts or dry cleaning. Senator Wesso's bill would extend those protections to pricing of most consumer products. The bill to eliminate the so-called pink tax is co-authored by San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez and sponsored by the Consumer Federation of America. The new bill would also require retailers to post signs informing consumers of their rights to equal pricing for similar products. Senator Wesso calls the gender pricing gap unfair and asks, why are retailers pulling extra money from women when data already shows that they earn about 84 cents for every dollar men earn? For minority women, the wage gap is even worse. Latinas and African American women earn just 43 cents and 63 cents, respectively, for every dollar that men receive in wages. Sometimes the pricing disparity on products is huge. Scooters sold online at Target that were identical except for color cost about $25 for a red version labeled for boys, and yet double the price, nearly $50, for an identical scooter in pink. That's according to a December 2015 New York City Department of Consumer Affairs study titled From Cradle to Cane, The Cost of Being a Female Consumer. Women paid 48% more for shampoos and conditioners, while senior women paid 21% more than men for urinals to use at home and 15% more for back supports and braces for their aching joints. That same study looked at gender pricing of 800 items, including toys, accessories, clothing, personal and home health care products for seniors. It found that women's products cost more 42% of the time, while men's products cost more just 18% of the time. On average, the price of products aimed at women and girls cost 7% more than men's or boys, and women paid more in 20 out of 25 categories studied. Now, similarly, back in 1994, a study for a California Assembly Committee on Consumer Protection found that adult women effectively paid a gender tax that cost each woman about $1,350 a year, or about $15 billion a year for all women in California. Now, part of that gap was eliminated by the Gender Tax Repeal Act on services. Now, Senator Wesso's bill would do the same for consumer products. But for now, women seeking to save money may wish to heed the advice of a recent Washington Post article that was titled, Why You Should Always Buy the Men's Version of Almost Anything. This bill is supported by the American Civil Liberties Union, the California Association of Retired Americans, Equal Rights Advocates, the Older Women's League, and the Women's Foundation of California, among other groups. The measure is opposed by business groups, including the California Chamber of Commerce, California Retailers Association, New Car Dealers Association, the Toy Industry Association, and others. The California Chamber of Commerce named this bill to its annual list of job killer measures, stating on its website that SB 899 drives up consumer costs and increases frivolous litigation. Opponents contend that the bill would also cause increased costs for businesses, and some argue that retailers might just raise prices for all products rather than lowering prices on goods for women. The California Retailers Association contends that price differences can be due to higher costs of package design, development, or marketing for certain women's products, and some also argue that the bill lacked clarity on just what would constitute similar products for purposes of gender pricing. Senator Wesso did introduce some amendments to clarify that companies can charge more if there are legitimate differences in costs of labor, materials, or tariffs, and that substantially similar means products are the same brand, share the same functional components, and share 90% of the same materials and ingredients. Richard Holabert, executive director of the Consumer Federation of California, supports Senator Wesso's bill, and he concludes, all consumers, regardless of their gender, should pay the same price for the same products. Pink packaging or gender-based marketing is no justification for charging more. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A woman's place is on the money. That was the slogan of Women on 20s, a group that launched a national effort to put a woman's face on our $20 bills. The group held a national vote last year with abolitionist leader Harriet Tubman named their number one choice. The Treasury Department initially balked at the proposal to remove Andrew Jackson, instead proposing to remove Founding Father and Treasury Department founder Alexander Hamilton off the $10 bill. The department also did not commit to choosing Tubman, initially weighing other famous women as alternatives. But the argument to remove Jackson proved compelling, with advocates citing the record of ordering genocide against Native Americans, including the Cherokee Trail of Tears. Meanwhile, Hamilton enjoyed a boost in popularity after the Broadway musical Hamilton, which won critical acclaim. So on Wednesday, U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew made it official, announcing that Tubman will replace former President Andrew Jackson as America's $20 bill starting in 2020. As an added bonus, while Alexander Hamilton will remain on the front of the $10 bill, the back side of the $10 bills will now have the faces of suffragette leaders who helped win the right for the women to vote. Harriet Tubman has been called the Moses of her time. An escaped slave born in the 1820s, she became a leading abolitionist before the Civil War. She risked her freedom to return to the South 19 times, rescuing slaves via the Underground Railroad, a network of secret safe houses on their journey to freedom in the North. Later, she served as a scout and spy for the Union Army. In her childhood, she saw her father freed and many of her brothers and sisters sold off. At 13, she refused to help restrain an escaped slave who had been captured and suffered a blow to the head that left her with seizures the rest of her life. She fled to freedom herself in 1848, but soon came back to rescue her own family and others, never losing a single passenger on the road to freedom. After the war, she advocated for freed slaves to receive an education and own property, also joining the fight for women's equality and the right to vote. Called General Tubman by her admirers, she was ultimately laid to rest with full military honors as one of the first African-American women to serve in the military. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Leon Thompson.
San Diego and East County now have a powerful voice for African-American students' needs advocating at the national level. Emma Turner, Vice President of the La Mesa Spring Valley School District Board of Education, has been elected Chair of the National Black Council of the National School Boards Association and installed as a member of the Council's Board of Directors. During her 2-year term of office, Dr. Turner aims to be the leading educational advocate for providing a quality education for all African American students across the nation, as well as all students in America. Dr. Turner will also serve as a spokesperson for issues that impact the education of African American youths. She says she's committed to ensuring that a quality education is accessible to all elementary through high school students, including college and career readiness. Dr. Turner has previously served as the Council's Pacific Region Director. She also served on the Delegate Assembly and Board of Directors of the California School Boards Association, among other positions. In addition, she is a retired naval officer, having served 27 years on active duty before launching her career in education. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from CAL FIRE. It's springtime in California, and CAL FIRE is already staffing up for fire season. Recent rains have been a welcome sight to drought-parched California, but CAL FIRE firefighters are not letting their guard down. Instead, they are training for another potential busy fire season and working hard to prevent large and damaging wildfires. Across the state, CAL FIRE has already hired a surge of over 400 additional seasoned firefighters, whose focus includes fire prevention, fuel reduction, and defensible space programs. Chief Pimlott, director of CAL FIRE, says, while the winter rain has helped decrease the fire risk in some areas, it has not been enough to end the drought. The rain is welcome, but it will not revive the millions of trees that have already died due to drought and bark beetle. Chief Pimlott adds, our firefighters are taking advantage of the weather and ensuring that we are doing everything we can to prevent the types of wildfires we experienced last year. While the additional firefighters are available to respond to wildfires, like the 240 fires that have already occurred statewide since January 1st, these firefighters will focus their efforts on fire prevention. The projects the crews are working on include removing dead trees, creating and maintaining fire breaks, removing dense brush, performing prescribed burning, and assisting homeowners with education on defensible space. While firefighters are busy performing fire prevention projects, it's critical that residents do their part to prepare for wildfires by maintaining 100 feet of defensible space around their homes and property, CAL FIRE emphasizes. This includes removing weeds and other dead or dying vegetation, trimming up tree branches, and cleaning off leaves and debris from roofs and gutters. For more information on how to create defensible space around your home and prepare for fire season, you can visit readyforwildfire.org.
The city of Lemon Grove and its fire department has brought in a four-footed fire prevention team. Goats are grazing alongside Highway 125 this week and next, clearing heavy brush to reduce fire danger and create defensible space to protect homes in the area. About 200 goats are munching their way through the area, provided by Environmental Land Management, the same company that's been used in recent years in El Cajon to create fire breaks around homes near Interstate 8. Homeowners there learn just how important this voracious fire abatement team can be. When a brush fire ignited the base of a hillside in 2011 and the defensible space cleared by the goats helped protect their homes and prevent any damage. Heartland Fire Chief Rick Sita says, "This type of brush abatement is a tremendous help to firefighters in protecting land and nearby homes from fast-moving brush fires during our hot and dry summer months and the long fire season we deal with in San Diego County." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. This is Miriam Raftery with a report on a threat to our region's winemaking industry. San Diego County now has over 100 wineries since adoption of a tiered winery ordinance. But now, proposed changes to that law are drawing harsh criticism from top local winemakers and at least one political candidate. Those changes are set for hearing next Wednesday, April 27th, by county supervisors. And leaders in Ramona's burgeoning wine industry warn in letters sent to supervisors that Ramona's wine industry could die on the vine if those changes are adopted. Two versions of the ordinance would be up for consideration, one approved by the Planning Commission, the other a recommendation by staff of the Planning and Development Services. A key difference is that the staff version would ban wineries from importing any wine, even for emergencies such as the earthquake that devastated vineyards in Napa Valley. Now, since San Diego is primarily a red wine-producing area, that means wineries would not be allowed to serve up Chardonnays for winery guests to sip either. Elaine Littleton, owner of Hatfield Creek Vineyards and Winery in Ramona, told us in an email that it's not just about this ordinance, it's about the culture of non-cooperation, she said, referring to the county staff, who she claims have no clue about economic development to create jobs and economic prosperity. Little, in a letter to supervisors, writes that, in effect, quote, staff is telling us to close our tasting rooms, unquote, in order to comply with a myriad of regulations that are way too costly for small winery owners to meet. For instance, she says, the county has denied permits for winery production buildings that were formerly called sheds, requiring costly upgrades such as ADA-compliant toilets at family-run businesses. Little says, we already know several grape farmers who have abandoned their dreams of having a boutique winery because of the staff's unending demands. Despite earning many medals for their wines, most Ramona winemakers are not yet generating profits enough to quit their day jobs, so couples like Little and her husband are working 7 days a week and averaging less than minimum wage, she says. Michael Moore, the president of the Ramona Valley Vineyards Association, as well as a winemaker at the Ramona Ranch Winery, says he worked with the Ramona Community Planning Group and others to develop suggestions to improve the proposed ordinance, which was passed by the County Planning Commission. But, he says, unfortunately, a small fraction of Ramona continues to sabotage the industry. He indicated he would meet with Supervisor Jacob before Monday's hearing in hopes of hammering out changes. And much of the opposition to the smaller wineries' wishes has come from a handful of larger wineries that were grandfathered in and have a vested interest in preventing upstart competitors from being successful. Perhaps the most scathing denunciation came from Tammy Rimes, owner of Hacienda de las Rosas Winery and former director of purchasing and contracting for the City of San Diego. She says, I'm appalled at the lack of customer service and ethical displays by your own planning team in regards to the upcoming winery ordinance updates, Rimes wrote in a letter to supervisors. Rimes, along with her late husband William, put in hundreds of hours helping to write the initial tiered winery ordinance. She says the updated ordinance was crafted to provide what she believes is a good balance between all parties, along with flexibility to be open to economic development and small business support. But she says the alternative that staff drafted on its own is much more regulatory oppressive and hinders the smallest wineries from being able to make a profitable business enterprise. A national speaker at government conferences, Rimes says that she'll be adding a slide to her next presentation about motivating government employees, and she'll be using San Diego's planning section as the nationwide example of how not to provide customer service. Fulfilling her husband's dream of opening a winery in Ramona took thousands of hours and many meetings battling county regulators, all while William was fighting cancer, which ultimately claims his life, says Rimes, who believes county staff has shown a lack of respect for those in the local wine industry. If more restrictions, regulations, or expensive requirements are imposed, she concludes, that will most likely move me toward the decision of possibly closing the family business. Eric Metz from Lenora Winery, also in Ramona, says that he, too, has not attained profitability yet after sinking hundreds of thousands of dollars into the business, largely to comply with what he views as onerous county regulations. He concludes, all of us have been led down a road of false promises by the county in that they touted the boutique winery ordinance as a by-right ability to do business as a winery. And he adds, the county let us think that our by-right entitlement to conduct business as a winery was like that for any other place within the state of California. He claims county staff intentionally misled county residents to achieve their hidden agenda of having residents invest financially into this emerging industry. He wrote, Metz also wants to know why the county isn't allowing wineries to operate by right in the manner of other wineries throughout the state of California. Tony Chiora is one of two candidates, both Republicans, running in the 71st Assembly District to represent East County, filling the void left by Assemblyman Brian Jones, who is leaving due to term limits. Chiora wants to know why state and local politicians who talk about reducing regulations to help businesses haven't taken action to save San Diego's wine industry. I'm shocked and appalled that my small business winemaking neighbors in Ramona are being destroyed by local bureaucrats who think they know better, he says, adding, this will kill a budding industry that is creating jobs and desperately needed in East County. While Chiora says he generally favors government that is closest to the people, in this case, he says that if elected, I will fight for this important industry, even if it means working in the assembly to get a state law that supersedes this local county ordinance stupidity.
The developer who wants to build a sand mine in Lakeside's El Monte Valley has submitted a scoping letter to the county with major changes from the original proposal. The developer is called El Monte Nature Preserve, LLC, but residents say the project would destroy the natural habitat for its duration, not preserve the environment. The region is a designated county scenic view corridor and home to many equestrian-based businesses as well as residents who move there for the rural lifestyle and tranquility. The revised proposal reduces the amount of sand to be extracted from 12 million cubic yards to 7 million cubic yards, but increases the acreage size from 199 acres to 230 acres, impacting an even broader area. Instead of 15 years, the new proposal calls for a 12-year project plus 4 years for restoration of the site after mining is completed. The depth has been reduced from 90 feet to no more than 35 feet. The original project called for creation of a large lake and a riparian nature preserve after the project's completion, but that's missing from the new plan, which would merely have a water feature, and then only if the El Capitan Reservoir releases surplus water into a spillway. Also missing from the new plan is an agreement to fill in three pits previously excavated as grading for a golf course that was never built. Neighbors' concerns include a steady stream of trucks hauling sand on narrow roads in front of residences, noise and impacts to air quality and ground quality. Health is also an issue, since potentially lethal valley fever spores have occurred in the soils of El Monte Valley. Project opponents have set up a Facebook page, Preserve R. El Monte, or POEM, and an email from POEM states, this is still a bad project, bad for the groundwater, bad for the residents, and bad for the community. POEM adds that residents should feel empowered by the changes, which make the project slightly less damaging and come in reaction to a large and vocal group of residents voicing concerns. POEM urges residents to keep spreading the word, adding, if we all work together, we will drive this project into the ground, no pun intended. The next step in the county's process will be a draft environmental impact report. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Liz Albert with the Crime Beat Report. The California Highway Patrol is looking for a black Mercedes-Benz that pulled up alongside a Chevrolet Malibu on State Route 125 around 1:30 Saturday morning and opened fire. The shooting injured a 22-year-old man from Spring Valley who was driving the Malibu. A woman passenger was not harmed. The shooting occurred near Hamishaw Road, close to the Route 54 interchange. Paramedics were called, and the victim was taken to Scripps Mercy Hospital, where he was showing stable life signs, KUSI reported. The attacker's vehicle was last seen traveling west on State Route 54.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Tasha Matthews on East County Magazine's show on KNSJ Radio. And today we have a special guest, Mrs. Stephanie Ortega. Stephanie Ortega, Vice President of Operations, has been with Promises to Kids, an organization dedicated to helping foster youth, for 10 years, and has followed many of the organization's Guardian Scholar students throughout their educational experiences. Mrs. Ortega earned her bachelor's degree in law and society with a minor in Spanish at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and completed her master's degree in forensic psychology at Argosy University in Washington, D.C. Stephanie manages Promises to Kids programming, including the entire Guardian Scholars program. She works with the scholarship committee, recruits and manages mentors, and fundraises for the program. Please welcome Stephanie Ortega. Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so the first question I have for you is, can you explain how Promises to Kids was founded?
Sure. Promises to Kids was founded in 1981, originally known as the Child Abuse Prevention Foundation. And in those times, child abuse was kind of taboo, wasn't really spoken about. There was a hotline for abused animals, but nothing for children. And that was when our founders realized that this was a really important necessity and needed to create this nonprofit. It originally started with one of our founders, Norma Hirsch. She tells a wonderful story you can find on our website about an abused child and needing to run out and get Polaroid cameras for all the policemen so they could take photos so that they could bring it to court to make sure that that child was protected.
Well,
yeah. And today our mission is to create a brighter future for foster children. And we have four core programs, one being the Polinsky Children's Center, which is San Diego County's emergency shelter for abused and neglected children. We also have Camp Connect, which brings siblings who are separated in the foster care system back together once per month, the day activities, in addition to a four-day summer camp. We also have Guardian Scholars, which you spoke about, which is a continuum of services to support current and former foster youth who have the goal of pursuing higher education from ninth grade. We serve students from ninth grade all the way through their higher education goal. And finally, we have a program called Foster Funds, which supports the unmet needs of current foster youth with the things every child should be afforded, such as prom dresses, music lessons, those something special things.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm curious to know what got you involved in Promises to Kids.
Sure. So like you said, I've been with Promises to Kids for 10 years. I learned about the position shortly after returning to San Diego from graduate school. I have a unique situation in that I started living on my own at 15. And thankfully, I had an older sister who kind of paved the way for me, just followed in her footsteps. That's how I graduated high school and ended up in college. But when I learned about this position, it just felt kind of right up my alley. It supporting other students who needed that support to get through high school and into college, which was exactly what I needed when I was going through it. And I thought, what a perfect fit. I'd love to share my story and help in any way I can.
Okay, cool. So that kind of relates to your passion and why you're passionate about what you do. That's awesome. All right. What are some statistics about foster youth transitioning out of foster care or out of high school? And what are Promises to Kids statistics on helping to remedy the situation?
Great question. Unfortunately, the statistics nationally for foster youth, they're not that great. About 50% of foster youth graduate high school. Of those, about 70% say they want to go to college, but only about 10% are making it there, and less than 3% are completing their higher education goal. Promises to Kids is really proud of their Guardian Scholars program. We have an over 80% success rate. Our students are graduating from high school and enrolling in higher education and then completing their higher education goals.
Okay, cool. What is the most memorable experience working at Promises to Kids?
That's a good one. There's so many. Since I have been there for 10 years, I've gotten to know so many students and been there at so many different pivotal times in their lives. I do think for me personally, graduations every year is the most memorable. I think I still just get chills when you hear a student's name and see them walk across the stage. Yeah. It's such an important time. It's a great accomplishment. And it's just really fun to be there and kind of share in that experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. What in your position requires a lot of hard work to sustain Promises to Kids, and how do you handle that work so that you are able to effectively get those things done?
That's a hard one. I think because I started working with Guardian Scholars and the students in that program, and that's really one of my passions, students in the program are the priority. Anything that they need, I want to make sure that myself or somebody in the office is available to support them. We assign mentors and any kind of wraparound services that are necessary to meet the needs. But at the end of the day, if a student calls me and they have a need, they are in a crisis, there's an emergency, I want to be sure that I can help them. With that said, I also have a 3-year-old daughter, you know, and just trying to balance the needs of work and home, important having that work-life balance. But it's easier when you love your job and you love the people you interact with.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, even as a student, I'm always constantly finding myself like balancing the things that I love to do, which is like, you know, I love school, I love being here. So it's like balancing, finding that fine balance between like those things.
And it's definitely practice, and it's good. There's good and bad days to it. Yeah. But it works. It comes together.
Yeah. Where do you see Promises to Kids 10 years from now?
So I can only hope that we are 100% meeting the needs of the foster youth that we serve. So I hope that if there are still siblings who are separated in foster care, that we can bring every single one of them together monthly, if not more frequent, to keep that bond going. For Guardian Scholars, unfortunately, we still have to turn students who apply to the program away. For every two students that apply, we have to turn one away. And I want to get to the point where we never have to do that, that every single student who wants to pursue higher education can participate in our program.
Yeah. How is Promises to Kids different from any other foster youth nonprofit organization?
I think Promises to Kids, because of it being founded in 1981, having such a long history, we've really been a community change maker. And we're most well known for raising the money to build the Polinsky Children's Center and also supporting in the capital campaign to build San Pasquale Academy. Again, Polinsky Children's Center is San Diego's emergency shelter for abused and neglected children. It was built in the 90s, and before that, there really was an inadequate placement for kids who were removed from their home. They were all crammed in one room. If one child got sick, all the kids got sick. It just really wasn't healthy for those kids. Polinsky is night and day, so much better. It's a 10-acre campus. They have everything they need right there, schooling, medical help, psychological help, a pool, a gym, everything you can think of is right there. And San Pasquale Academy is a residential high school for foster kids, and it just allows them to complete their high school education with the support to successfully do that.
Wow, it sounds like so many things have improved in the past, and Promises to Kids has been a huge help in that. It's awesome.
Yeah, and finally, we were the first to bring Guardian Scholars down to San Diego. Yeah. So really supporting and continuing that mission to support kids from birth all the way through to adulthood.
Yeah, and just to segue into foster care in general, are there ways in which foster care has improved since the founding of Promises to Kids?
Well, I think, like I alluded to, every year we get a little bit better. So I think my best examples are the Polinsky Children's Center. Yeah. So it's so much better than what was in place before Polinsky was built in the 90s. you can hopefully keep siblings together. You can provide the interventions that are necessary. Promises to Kids still funds 5 programs that occur at Polinsky. Mm-hmm. We have developmental screening and enhancement programs, so the interventions necessary from the 0 to 5 age range to help those foster kids get back on track at the same level of other peers. We also have the preschool, health and wellness, pet therapy, and a youth-to-youth program. So that's where former foster youth come back and peer mentor the kids that are now in the foster care system living at Polinsky Children's Center.
Okay. And then what can listeners do to help Promises to Kids?
Well, we love any support that we can get. I would encourage listeners to visit our website at www.promises2kids.org. And that's promises, plural, the number 2, and kids, plural, .org. Right there on that website, you can find a link to donate. We'd also love to have any volunteers. And there's an additional link to sign up for one of our volunteer orientations.
Cool. Any upcoming events listeners should know about?
Yeah, we actually have an annual summer concert gala, and it is the beginning of June, so it's coming right up.
How
we
fun.
Find a wonderful performer that comes every year. We're not yet sure who that is, but it will be listed on our website, so definitely check back there. It's a great event at a beautiful estate in La Jolla. We have over 600 people that attend, and it's just a wonderful night, so we'd love to have anybody there.
All right. And are there any last-minute thoughts that you would like the viewers to know?
I think you covered it, but thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here, Stephanie. Once again, this is Tasha Matthews on East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes a Wings of Freedom Vintage Air Show, Earth Day activities, Lakeside's Western Days Parade, a Beethoven to Broadway concert, a Spring Garden Festival, and an artist's reception.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including an Arbor Day celebration, the launch of El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert series, a hike on the El Monte Flume Trail, the Coyote Music Festivals, and more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more. You're invited to view or take a flight aboard vintage World War II aircraft at the Ramona Airport this Saturday as part of the Collings Foundation's Wings of Freedom Tour. The display will include a Boeing B-17 Flying Fortress, one of only 8 left of the United States in flying condition, and the B-24J and full dual-control Mustang fighter, the only remaining example of these type of planes in the world, among other restored vintage airplanes. The Collings Foundation, a nonprofit educational group, encourages veterans and their families to attend and share their experiences and stories with the public. For tickets and a full schedule of events, you can visit collingsfoundation.org. And for flight reservations, you can call 800-568-8924.
An Earth Day community mural project is being launched in Santee at the Walker Preserve this weekend. Volunteers are needed to help paint a series of 6 murals at the Magnolia Avenue underpass along the San Diego River starting Friday, April 22nd through Monday, April 25th from 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. All ages are welcome to participate, but those under 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Artists and experienced painters are highly desired. To join in, you can meet at the Walker Preserve entrance at 9500 Magnolia Avenue in Santee, or visit the City of Santee's website events section for details.
The Spring Garden Festival at Cuyamaca College, now in its 23rd year, is a family-friendly community celebration of spring and a greener future that attracts over 3,000 visitors each year. This year's festival, set for 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, April 23rd, features fun programs, exhibitors, and demonstrations to help you become a better gardener and learn how to conserve our precious resources. Some festival highlights include the Cuyamaca College Ornamental Horticulture Department holding its biggest plant sale of the year. Faculty and students from the Horticultural Department will be presenting information on a wide variety of topics and answering questions. Plus, there will be children's activities and exhibits, information on garden clubs, and prize drawings. For more information, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
Lakeside's Western Days Parade will roll out on Saturday, April 23rd at 9:35 a.m. down Main Street in downtown Lakeside. Now in its 51st year, this year's parade, hosted by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce, will feature the theme, America Strong, Lakeside Strong. The parade features equestrians, floats, marching bands, and more.
The East County Festival Chorus and Orchestra's spring concert on April 24th will feature works ranging from Beethoven to Broadway. The concert will be held at the College Avenue Baptist Church in San Diego. For tickets and more information, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
The Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation presents an exhibition featuring an award-winning plein air artist, Marilyn Hallin, on display from April 23rd through May 20th at the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center. A reception honoring the artist will be held on Sunday, April 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. and the public is invited. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The Danny Green Trio, a critically acclaimed traditional and modern jazz group, will perform on April 28th at the Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Center in Rancho San Diego at 7:30 p.m. The trio has won a San Diego Music Award for Best Jazz Album. The performance is all part of the spring concert series at Cuyamaca College. For tickets, you can visit cuyamacacollege.edu. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The City of El Cajon invites the public to an Arbor Day celebration on Saturday, April 30th at 8 a.m. in Hillside Park. The city will be giving away free tree seedlings and light refreshments as they commemorate the city's 18th year of receiving the Tree City USA Award.
Dinner and a concert opening night at the Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon kicks off on Friday, May 6th with Clay Colton playing country rock. You can enjoy music and dancing every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m., starting May 6th through October 7th. Bring a picnic or you can have dinner at one of the many restaurants in downtown El Cajon. For a complete lineup of concerts, you can go to downtownelcajon.com.
The Coyote Music Festival returns to Cuyamaca College on Saturday, May 7th, starting at 12 noon at Cuyamaca College on the Grand Lawn. Now in its eighth year, the entirely student-run festival provides the community with an afternoon of live outdoor music. The festival also culminates a semester worth of work for students studying music, technology, recording, and business. For details on this event, visit cuyamaca.edu.
Quirky and fun, Hakuba Hot Springs Community-Wide Yard Sale takes place on Saturday, May 7th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Old Highway 80 and Railroad Station. Besides shopping for yard sale finds and perusing those handmade arts and crafts items, you can also take a ride in a flying saucer for a unique photo opportunity or tour the Chinese castle where rumors swirl about its infamous past. Was the castle a gift from a sea captain to his bride? Did a murder really once occur there? Is there a smuggler's tunnel to Mexico? You can find out, fact versus fiction, on this tour on May 7th.
On Saturday, May 7th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., hikers will discover the historical flume that was built in the late 1800s to bring water from the Cuyamaca Mountains to the city of San Diego. Hikers will learn about the fauna and flora of Blossom Valley Hill, view a tunnel that was built in the late 1800s, and enjoy the gorgeous views of El Monte Valley. This hike begins with a strenuous quarter of a mile uphill switchback section before hitting the historical flume trail. The remaining trail is easy to moderate. Meet the ranger at the staging area parking lot across the street from the main park. Wear appropriate hiking shoes, sun protection, and bring water. Inclement weather will cancel this event. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History. A quirky relic of East County's past is now gone. Locals called the nest-shaped satellite dish the pterodactyl birdbath. Officially, the 60-foot-wide radio telescope was part of the La Posta Astrogeophysical Observatory run by the Naval Electronics Laboratory in Campo at the base of the Laguna Mountains in San Diego's East County. Also known as the La Posta Microwave Space Relay Station, the observatory played a key role in Apollo space launches, providing ionospheric forecasting to predict solar activity that could hamper communications from the ground to the space capsules carrying the first astronauts to the moon. It measured environmental disturbances and provided solar radio mapping, also playing a key role in development of a solar optical videometer for microwave research. A building under the dish housed a turbine-powered alternator to power the dish operation, since there was not enough power available then from the national grid. An operator controlled the dish by computer from inside the building, monitoring its movements by closed-circuit TV. In 1986, the observatory was officially decommissioned, and the surrounding site converted for use as a naval weapons training facility. But the large satellite dish remained, an odd local landmark looming high for decades. Then in November of last year, dismantling of the satellite dish began, and by early this year, it was gone, relegated to the pages of history and the memories of local residents. Tim Cass, a longtime East County resident, tipped us off to this fascinating bit of history, remarking wistfully, "Quite a sight, gone from view."
The San Diego City Council will be voting on whether to approve two ballot bond measures to fund construction of new fire stations in the city of San Diego. The measure was approved by the Rules Committee Monday. If approved by the Council and by voters in November, the initiatives could allocate $205 million to build nearly 20 fire stations in areas where response times are longer than the recommended standard of 7 minutes 30 seconds. Destruction of Rancho Bernardo during the 2007 firestorms was blamed in part on a lack of fire stations in the community, according to a federal hearing chaired by Senator Dianne Feinstein at the time. Many other communities are similarly lacking adequate coverage nearly a decade later. A study found in 2010 that San Diego needs at least 19 more fire stations, of which 10 were deemed critical. Since then, just one of those has been built in Mission Valley. Construction is underway for a second one in Little Italy, and funding has been approved for 3 more in Black Mountain Ranch, the South Bay, and University City. The other 14 stations might not be built for years, if ever, unless the bond measures are approved. Councilmember Marty Emerald says at the current rate that the city is building new fire stations, just one every 5 years, it would take nearly 100 years to build enough to meet current needs. If the bond measures proposed by Emerald are approved, those stations would all be built within 10 years. The average cost per station, including land acquisition, is $10 million. But winning voter approval will be a challenge, since the measures would raise property taxes and thus require approval by two-thirds of the voters. The tax increase would average about $25 a year per household, which Emerald calls a real value for greater public safety in San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now that's what I would call an obliging plant.
another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife-attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular-shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers, that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
Don't let your guard down after this wet winter. Rain can't revive the millions of trees that are dead from years of drought. The bark beetle epidemic continues, infesting and killing even more trees. The more dead trees, the greater the threat from wildfires that will have more material to fuel their intensity. Now is the time to create and maintain 100 feet of defensible space around your home by removing dead trees, brush, and vegetation. Learn more from CAL FIRE at readyforwildfire.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.